Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. What is Bitcoin and how does it work? It's a question a lot of people have been asking even after an explanation. We'll be talking about this digital world currency a little bit later. But first, Sam Dotson, chief of the Metropolitan St. Louis Police Department, joins us by phone. Chief, good to have you with us.
Don, good afternoon.
It's a busy time of year for you, I know, as it is for all of us. I hope things are going well.
They are. You know, we've gotten through Thanksgiving, and I don't know if you saw over Thanksgiving, we started to send out kind of safety reminders through our Twitter account, you know, reminding people to park smart, reminding as they go shopping to be aware of their surroundings. So we're trying to push the messages out there so everybody has a safe and enjoyable holiday season.
I gather a number of people did not park smart necessarily in Forest Park over this past weekend. Here we go again with these car cloudings.
But what happened this weekend is from about 8:30 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon, there were eight or nine cars that were parked in a variety of locations. And again, we saw things like laptops that were stolen, things like purses that were stolen. And yeah, I want to be clear, I'm certainly not blaming the victim. I certainly would never blame an individual who was a victim of a crime. But what I do know is that criminals are opportunistic. And they look for opportunities to break into cars where there are these items. And so we've seen those items stolen from cars in Forest Park. We've been working very diligently, actually, with Forest Park Forever, coming up with some ideas and some strategies for the spring. And I don't think we're quite ready to announce them, but we do have some big plans for Forest Park to have some new systems in place that will hopefully help alleviate this problem. Well, I don't know if we can ever reduce crime to zero. Certainly, I'm excited about the plans we're working on in Forest Park right now.
But the bottom line is people have to really learn to hide their valuables so that they're not exposed and therefore present inviting targets.
Absolutely. That is it. That we call it Park Smart. That keep your valuables out of sight. If you go shopping, don't load up your trunk and then go back into the mall so people know that there are items in your car. So, again, it's a public education campaign. I never want to blame the victim. I understand that. But, again, I know criminals look for opportunities. And if we limit those opportunities, hopefully crime will go down.
Chief, do you have any sense of who's doing this? Are we talking about gangs in cars or individuals? Any witnesses to give you any help in that regard?
Well, what we do know is that individuals like to steal cars, and they range in age from as young as 13 and 14 into their 20s and 30s, and that they've become savvy. As we've adjusted our tactics, they've adjusted their tactics as well. Where it used to be that an entire parking lot would be victimized at a time, now these individuals that have stolen cars and are driving stolen cars will hit one or two cars very quickly, get in the car, go to another area, hit one or two cars, get in the car, and drive away very quickly. And they also know, the criminals also know, that we have one of the most restrictive pursuit policies in the country, or at least I believe it's one of the most restrictive, where we do not allow officers to chase individuals in vehicles for property crime. There has to be a serious felony committed with physical harm or the threat of physical harm in order for us to engage in a pursuit. So a stolen car doesn't meet that criteria. So the criminals know that they can run from us. But in an urban area, we have to be very cautious. I don't want, 14 and 15-year-olds driving stolen cars running at 100 miles an hour to get away from the police.
Here come the drones.
Well, and again, I think, as technologies develop, drones being one of them, as technologies develop, we have to look for ways to implement them. And certainly a way to keep people safer is to have surveillance. We do it in a helicopter. A drone is no different than a helicopter. And your phones will light up and our Twitters will light up that I said the word drones. But really, I think society has to understand these are not tools to spy. What they are is to try and keep people safe. Fight crime, reduce crime, keep people safe.
Well, anybody who watched 60 Minutes this weekend has heard an awful lot about drones then and since, with Amazon talking about maybe getting into the drone business to deliver books and other merchandise.
So, I think a little tongue-in-cheek there, but I think that there certainly is, as technologies, again, develop, we have to take advantage of them.
What's going on in South St. Louis right now? I think you've got three hot spots working in the Tower Grove South area, Gravois Park, and the Shaw neighborhoods. What's happening?
Well, and hotspot policing is the way that we do business. And what it takes is resources and puts them into neighborhoods that are seeing increases in crime are problems that I'm trying to stem. We've done it in the College Hill neighborhood earlier this year, and I still see residual effects from us being in the College Hill neighborhood in January. Just more recently, we're in the Fountain Park and Lewis Place neighborhoods, and now we're in South St. Louis. We meet every Thursday morning. I look at crime every day, but I meet every Thursday morning with my commanders and talk about crime, talk about the trends, the patterns. And I was seeing some patterns in those neighborhoods specifically, but in South St. Louis, that crime goes up and down. It goes up and down 1 week, up and down. I wasn't seeing that up and down. I was seeing a grow in that neighborhood, and so those neighborhoods. And so I was concerned about it. So we focused on those neighborhoods. What I'm seeing is burglaries, larcenies from vehicles, and some robberies. So those are the crimes that we're really focusing on with hotspot policing in those three neighborhoods, and we kicked that off on Monday.
People might therefore ask if I don't want to use the term flooding these neighborhoods with patrols and officers and what have you, but certainly putting a lot more emphasis on them. Are other areas of the city therefore vulnerable because there are fewer officers available?
No, because each district is staffed with officers. And we'll talk about redistricting in a second. But right now, each district is staffed with officers. The officers that we take and put into those neighborhoods are officers that work throughout the city anyway, that have kind of a city perspective. There are mobile reserve unit. There are special operations people. There are traffic safety division. So if you live in the Walnut Park or the Penrose neighborhood, none of your officers are down in the Tower Grove neighborhood. If you're in St. Louis Hills or Lindenwood Park, none of your officers are in Tower Grove or Shaw. Those officers that are focusing on there are the officers that we have. We've built into our numbers to be able to go in and hotspot and target that. Now when we redistrict, which right now the target date is February 1st for redistricting, when we redistrict, what we've done is we've balanced the workload throughout the city. So we're going from 9 districts to 6 districts. Each district will have essentially the same number of calls for service, essentially the same amount of crime, and we'll put the same number of officers in each district. And then what we've done on top of that is put officers to do hotspot policing. So each captain, each district commander will have the ability to focus in on the problems that they're having in a way that they don't have right now.
Why are 6 districts more efficient and better than 9?
The 9 district structure was put in place in 1962. At least that's as far back as I can track it. What it reflected was a city that had a population of 700,000 people, a police department of over 2,000 officers. In the 50 years or so since that time, we've seen changes. We've seen economic changes. We've seen socioeconomic changes, demographic changes, a variety of things. Just to give you an example, the busiest district compared to the slowest district right now, there's a 90,000 call spread over 3 years. So that means that officers in the busy district answered 90,000 more calls than the officers in the slowest district. There was an imbalance in the workload, which means police departments work kind of on a model of a third, a third, and a third. A third of an officer's time should be spent answering 911 calls. A third of an officer's time should be spent writing police reports, doing training, doing follow-up investigations. And then a third of an officer's time should be spent on self-initiated activity, really going out and doing proactive problem-solving policing. Because of the inequity in the workload between the districts, some districts didn't have the ability to do self-initiated activity the way others did. So by balancing it out and putting extra resources in districts just to do that self-initiated activity, we're hoping that we'll be able to continue to drive down crime, which, by the way, since 2006 is down 47%. And we're seeing the lowest levels in crime since the 1970s, since the early 1970s.
Well, that brings to mind a New York Times article that I'm sure you're familiar with from a couple of weeks ago, in which it really was very negative toward the crime situation in St. Louis, particularly North St. Louis. I'm sure you looked at that not very happily.
Well, and that was a slice of life piece that could have been written about St. Louis. It could have been written about Detroit, Memphis, Kansas City. Actually, it's kind of interesting. That reporter for the New York Times lives in Kansas City and comes to this side of the state quite frequently to visit family and friends. And I think kind of just took advantage of his familiarity with St. Louis to write that piece. I'm not saying that we don't have crime, and I'm not saying that we don't have challenges. What I'm saying is the reality is that we're making progress. I don't want to be Pollyannish. I know we have crime. I know we have victims. I know we have work to do. But when we talk about the progress that we're making, crime's down 47% since 2006. That's a significant decrease. Still have work to do, but it's a significant start.
What sort of impact on the morale of your personnel does an article like that have? It received national attention.
Well, we're gonna go through the same exercise probably later this week or early next week when CQ Press releases their books of lists, which talk about the most dangerous cities. I don't know exactly where St. Louis is going to fall, but St. Louis will be somewhere probably in the top five. It doesn't reflect the reality of the community that we live in, because you can't compare St. Louis to Detroit, to Kansas City, to Indianapolis fairly. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Those books of lists that are they're going to come out later this month, immediately the FBI says you cannot use our numbers to compare cities for a variety of reasons. St. Louis at 62 square miles, how can you compare that to 320 square miles in Kansas City? When St. Louis's city is just the urban core, Kansas City has the urban core, suburban, and rural to offset their numbers. It's not fair because places like Chicago, if you look in the FBI's UCR report, the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, there's an asterisk next to Chicago and say they don't report their rape numbers, so they're not used in any statistical analysis. So right away, the data that these books use is flawed because it's not comparing apples to apples. Again, I know we have crime here, but the officers do a great job. We arrest 30,000 people a year on a variety of charges, from traffic all the way up to serious felonies. The police department is really trying to make an impact into crime in all parts of the city. When officers hear things like that, it does have a deflating effect, and it's my job to keep them motivated and keep them focused because we are having an impact.
While we're talking about officer morale, I'm wondering if you have any position on the release of these incident reports and investigative files that have been subject of the news the last day or two with regard to that scalping situation in 2007 and officers involved in that.
And that's an ongoing legal conversation. And it got sent back to the trial court, I believe, for some additional work. Police officers, I always worry about keeping their morale. That's probably one of the biggest things that has an impact on morale. We ask police officers in a lot of cases to go out and make split-second decisions. And I've been out there in the trenches with them. Hey, it's very hard in the dark of night when somebody's pointing a gun at you to show restraint. And every time an officer does, you be thankful that they go home and see their family at the end of the night. So to take their internal affairs histories and to try and use them or to make them public like this, if we talk about motivating and demotivating, that's going to have a tremendous demotivating factor on the department.
You're listening to Chief Sam Dodson of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. We'll continue our conversation after a break, and I want to encourage you, the listener, to come into this conversation. If you have questions of the chief, maybe holiday public safety concerns, come on in at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet at STL on air. Back with Chief Sam Dodson in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. Now back to our conversation with Chief Dodson. Chief, the city now has control of the police department. It hasn't had it for too long. But what, if any, changes have you seen as a result of this transfer?
Well, just as we've been working on this for over a year, trying to make sure that the transition was as smooth, as seamless as possible, it really was. On September 1st, when we moved from the state to local control, nothing changed. When you called 911, the police officers still responded, the same officers in the same cars. And really, the assimilation between the police department and city government has gone very well.
Well, that's good. And what's in the immediate offing as far as affecting this transfer?
Really, what we're looking for now are efficiencies. What we've done is the commission side, the uniform side, remains untouched. What has happened is that we've looked for areas of duplication. For example, fleet services. The city maintained a fleet garage. We maintained our own fleet. Now we're working with them to maintain the fleet together. Hopefully, over time, there'll be cost savings, and that money can be reinvested back into the city and back into the police department. We've seen the same thing with the personnel divisions. We had one. The city had one. Same thing with legal. So those areas, I think on the civilian side, we will, over time, see some efficiencies and some savings.
We have a number of residents of the city who want to get into this conversation, Chief Dodson. Let's begin the process with Grant calling from St. Louis. Grant, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Don. I question the wisdom of letting the public know what your plans are. After all, you are essentially our municipal military, and military works best when there are secrets. I live right off of Hampton across from Tilly's Park, and there were some break-ins and some guys casing the neighborhood the last few days. So, I mean, we are experiencing the effects of this being known.
Well, and I view it slightly differently. A couple of things happen. We don't always publicize what we're doing. Just for example, in the Shaw, the Tower Grove, and Gravelly Park neighborhoods, we sent officers in 2 weeks ago undercover in plain clothes to start to do a little intelligence building to start to understand where some of the problems were. So we didn't publicize that. We've been in those neighborhoods for 2 weeks prior. We also see some benefit from when we talk about crime and the areas that we're going to be in to publicize it. My goal, a police department should not measure their success by the number of people we arrest. We should measure our success by the number of people we keep safe or the crimes we prevent. So if talking about crime and telling people we're going to be in a neighborhood prevents crime, absolutely, I'll do it all day long.
It's hard, however, to prove a negative in that regard. You really have to look at the crime.
But really, that's how we should measure our success, not in an activity, because if you think about it, if we have to arrest an individual, the crime has already occurred and somebody's been victimized. So if I have to arrest somebody, really on some level we've failed, because I really want to prevent those crimes from occurring. Much more difficult and much easier to count arrested people, but that's my goal, is to keep people safe.
Well, we have a tweet from Brett, who gets right to the point. He's got an idea for helping out. He says, get cops out of cars and walk the beat instead of hotspot policing.
Well, and again, if you look around the country and you talk to whether it's Rick Rosenfeld at UMSL or chiefs around the country, I would like to see more officers out of the car, absolutely. But what we have to do is to be able to deliver resources into the areas that are most challenged. And so having an officer walk a footbeat, and we do that with our academy classes. The first 30 days when they come out of the academy, they spend on footbeats, getting to know the job, getting to know the areas. There's some utility, though, in having officers in vehicles, being able to cover larger areas. And a footbeat officer makes the neighborhoods feel great. I'm all for that. But we also need to be able to respond to crime as it's happening.
Let's bring in Kelly calling from Tower Grove. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about the policy, or if there is a policy, on officers sharing information with residents when there's a situation going on. For instance, when they're gathered on my street, or, you know, there's some helicopters going around the neighborhood and there's some officers, if we ask or inquire, you know, what's going on, I feel like they're reluctant to share the information with us. And I didn't know if there was a policy that kind of prevented them from sharing the information, or if they just didn't want to
On the highest level, no, there isn't a policy. When you get down to a little more of the detail, certainly criminals even have rights, and so certain nuances of a case may not be. But certainly if you know, there are three police cars on your street and you ask what's going on, as long as they're not actively engaged in police work, I would expect that an officer would say, hey, we're here because somebody called, we're here because of a traffic stop, we're here for whatever reason. There's nothing that prohibits them from doing that. There is a little nuance if you want to talk about specifics of a case, but at the higher level, no, there isn't.
Thanks, Kelly. Let's bring in Tom in South City. Go ahead, Tom. Tom, you're with us.
Don.
Go ahead.
Don. Thank you, Chief Dodson, for mentioning the crime reduction stats. I didn't know about that, and especially for explaining how St. Louis unfairly winds up with those high crime rankings over and over again. It really damages our national reputation.
It does, and you get to your question, but I just want to add something. People say, well, why should we care about that? If we really talk about how to cause change in not only St. Louis City but in the region, economic development is one of the keys. When companies look to relocate, when they look to relocate jobs, they look at tax rates, they look at cost of living, they also look at crime. So if we're portrayed inaccurately, some companies may not make investments. And a classic example of going on right now is Boeing. I'm sure Boeing is looking at every aspect of every region they're looking at, including cost of living, cost of labor, cost of crime. So that's why it's important. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, thank you. I'm grateful that you're able to be so articulate about that. And what I'd like to respectfully challenge you on is, even with the reduction in crime stats, you know, we still have this nationwide heroin and painkiller epidemic, all the news stories about the knockout game, the car break-ins in Forest Park. And, I can think of a number of stories of the St. Louis Police Department giving what I think is undue attention to peace activists and environmental activists over recent years. And I really wonder if that's a a good use of our resources because, you know, no matter how much the crime stats go down, there's always going to be more victim crimes. And when you actually see what's going on with the activist stuff, it seems like a lot of resources from the police department on these really law-abiding citizens who are trying to make a better society. But how can you respond to that?
Well, and I agree with you. I absolutely support everybody's First Amendment right to have their voice heard, to protest, to peacefully assemble. The question is, or what we've seen is, and whether it's at an Occupy event, coal miners protest, a Trayvon Martin event, there are sometimes, not always, but sometimes, activists or groups that get involved that have motives or have desires that aren't always in concert with what the true event is about. And so, unfortunately, we have to police for that. I would like not to have to staff a miners protest, a coal miners protest downtown, or a Trayvon Martin event, or an Occupy event. But unfortunately, we do know that some crimes spur from those. And so that's really kind of a quandary that I'm in. If I do it, people like you ask, why is it a good use of resources? And that's a fair question. If I don't do it and something happens, somebody goes, well, you knew this was going to happen. Why didn't you prepare for it? So I'm really kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. We do try and talk to organizers as much as we can to understand the full intent of their event. And then we make a decision or a judgment call on what types of resources to deploy to that. I can't turn my back on a peaceful assembly because there is always the chance that some counter message may be there as well, too. So it's a very complicated. It's not that we decide, oh, we're going to target this group. I'm trying to support their right while keeping everybody safe.
Tom, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Katie calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi, Chief. I'm a Benton Park resident, and Tuesday night, I believe it was, there's a gun range nearby, but in the evening that you all, a police gun range, but there was a lot of concern that all the Benton Park residents were hearing automated weapons, and one a military member called it sounding like a rolling gun battle, and I guess dozens of people called into the police department from 9 to 10 o'clock Tuesday night. Wanting to know why we were hearing automatic weapon fire, and it wasn't for days that we found out, or till the next afternoon, that it was from a police department gun range. And so we're all curious as to what kind of transparency so we know what's going on, and if that's something we're going to continue hearing on a regular basis in the evenings.
Well, we do have a gun range inside of the city of St. Louis that we share with the FBI. And so there are police officers and FBI agents training there quite frequently and sometimes into the evening. I think we try and typically stop between 9 and 10, and I don't know specifically the day that you were there or the guns, but we do have a partnership with the FBI. So it could have been us, it could have been them. If you wanted to call my office, I'd be happy to talk to you and make sure that we get somebody to communicate with you about when training is going on there, just to put you at ease.
Okay. Thank you.
Katie, thank you for the call. Let's take a final call now from Mark in St. Louis. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, I wanted to ask about in the future, it seems like St. Louis City and St. Louis County working more closely together. I was wondering, will there ever be a time in or is just one big police department, no more city and county?
Well, I think you've actually kind of hit the nail on the head about regionalism and what's best for the region right now. We've already seen that Mayor Slay and County Executive Dooley have combined the economic development piece so the city and the county don't compete for business. We compete as a region. We've seen Civic Progress kind of work with the school districts in North County to try and help unify them. Chief Fitch and I see crime as a regional problem. Just because there's a city-county border, criminals don't recognize it. You and I, we live in the city. We may go to the county to have dinner or to shop. People that live in the county certainly come downtown for baseball and football. Criminals go back and forth the same way. So Chief Fitch and I are approaching it. We've got joint ventures around helicopters. We've got joint ventures on Metrolink. We ride the train together. We've just combined our bombing and arson. And we've talked about cross-deputizing city officers and county officers so we can go back and forth and enforce ordinances. I think that will have a significant impact on crime, too. I think we talked about the crime rankings. We need to look at St. Louis as a region. If we do that, Chief Fitch and I estimate that if we combine the crime stats in the city and the crime stats in the county, we go from that top tier, that top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, down to somewhere in the middle, somewhere between 30 and 50. I can tell you who the top 5 are, maybe the top 10, but when you get below 20, I can't tell you who the top 20 cities are. That's the reality of the community that we live in. That's how we should approach crime.
We only have a few seconds left, Chief Dotson. You're 1 month away from being on the job for exactly 1 year as chief. Are you where you want to be at this point?
I think over the past year, I've spent a lot of time on getting our systems in place, getting the department headed in the direction I want, hotspot policing as an example. Spent a lot of time on the local control issue, assimilating the city and the police department together. I think the next year is going to be focused on operations and street-level tactics and really try and even drive that crime decreases even more. So it's been a great first year. It's been a very fast first year. I think we've done a lot of good things, redistricting, hotspot policing. And I think we got a lot more good to come next year.
Chief Dotson, thanks so much for being with us. I hope you have a successful holiday season.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks, Doc.
When we come back, we'll talk about Bitcoins. What are they? And do they have a future? This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.